this.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
But I'll probably hate it.
Celtics will have to shoot one more time or take the shot clock violation. It was a building ready to explode at the start, and LeBron James defused it with a legendary performance. Terry Rozier takes the shot clock violation, which will be a fourth quarter turnover for him. 42 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists, highlight after highlight after highlight, and the clock will hit triple zeros. And in spite of it all, LeBron James and the Cavs are going back to Cleveland. Down 0-2. A stirring come-from-behind win in what may have been the Marcus Smart game of all Marcus Smart games. The final score, Boston 107, Cleveland 94. The Celtics lead the Eastern Conference Finals 2-0.
And we continue with our thoughts and yours on the phone. Stephen Burlington, lead us off this hour. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to check in two quick points on Danny Ainge. Just the thought of the picks of both Tatum and Brown. Brown seemed pretty fearless last night, going right back at LeBron, even though LeBron's obviously the best player in the game. And Tatum also, too, to show in the poise. And also the second point, just closing the book on the Kyrie trade. Who is that? IT Crowder and the number 8 overall pick for Kyrie Irving, top 10 player in the league. I don't know. Seemed kind of like a steal.
Yes, it's a steal for you. But again, on that one, I don't think Cleveland did horrible because, I don't know, he was going to leave anyway for nothing. He was either going to shut it down and get surgery when he didn't. Well, maybe he did really need it, right? But anyway, he was, you know, he wanted out so bad he was going to undergo the knife and not even play for them and then walk as a free agent or whatever. So the Cleveland was, if they had hung on to him, the point where they're going to get nothing for him. And was there a better offer out there?
Oh, that I don't think so.
So, like,
I don't think they had many options, no.
So I think Cleveland was in a bad spot and did not get great value for him, but I don't think they could have. So, like, but if you want Ainge in those draft picks, you know, for all the you know, credit that Stevens is getting, and deservedly so, if I had to rank who's more responsible, it's Ainge.
I mean, to me, it's about those two players. I'll say it, and look.
And even Rozier. I mean, even Rozier, who, again, I think folks are overrating, but still, he's filled in and given them more than representative starting point guard play from the middle of the first round 3 years ago.
And he doesn't turn the ball over. So even if he's not great offensively every night, he's not making mistakes that kill you, right? So there's at least that. But to me, it's about Brown and Tatum. I don't know that I'd swap him for any other coach in the league, given what they've built and what they are. But Tatum and Brown have made all the difference. From day one of the season, those guys have made all the difference.
Quickly, Jimmy Stewart. I'm just going over the draft from 3 years ago with Jaylen Brown. Simmons, Ingram, Brown. And then I'm looking at the guys behind it. Is there a single guy who deserves to be taken ahead of Jaylen Brown behind him in that entire draft? I mean, you tell me. I mean, not Chris Dunn, not Buddy Hield. Remember all the debates we had about all those guys? I mean, you tell me. Is there anyone in there? You look at it. You know this stuff better than I do. And maybe I've just gotten through the end of the first round, but I that was the last good player left on the board.
If you're talking about, you know, both ends of the floor now, right? Because, like I would tell you, Jamal Murray in Denver is a good player.
Would you rather have him or Jaylen Brown?
Jaylen Brown.
So, I mean,
he might be the number one pick in the draft.
If you redrafted in 2016, Simmons, Ingram, Brown.
He might be number one.
I think you're definitely doing that last year with Tatum.
Yes. Yep. You might have hit both. You might have got the best player in the draft both times.
So give Stevens all the credit he deserves. That, you know, I might start with Ainge. Here's Mike in Boston. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey guys. So listen, you heard it here first. I noticed last night, right? LeBron comes back from getting hit from Tatum, right? And the camera pans onto LeBron's face, and I saw him mouth the words "ankle" to one of his teammates, assuming that his teammate probably would obviously think there'd be something wrong, or they knew that something was wrong with his ankle. So I'm like, ankle? And then I'm starting to think about how LeBron's been playing. First game, didn't do anything. Wasn't hustling.
So let me tell you, you think he has an ankle injury. Thank you for the call, Michael. So he turned to a teammate and mouthed, are you sure he didn't turn to a teammate and mouth a-hole?
Yeah, it kind of looks the same.
Like, why don't you guys do something, you a-hole? Can you make a shot, you a-hole? Can you get back on D, you a-hole? It's hard to tell. Now, the concussion thing, get ready for this. Like, this is going to bug the crap out of me.
See, I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it either.
I don't want to hear it.
He doesn't have one.
And the other thing is, LeBron himself said after the fact last night that it didn't affect the way I played. And whether it did or it didn't, A, I'll take his word for it. But B, even if I don't, I don't care.
I don't care if he broke his jaw. Wire it and be back for game three. Wire it and be back for the second half.
And again, back to Jackson and Van Gundy. Didn't Jackson say at one point that if this were Kobe or this were Michael, he'd be going down guns blazing?
Yeah.
And sort of getting on LeBron for not shooting or not being assertive later in that game. And he didn't, I don't care if you're banged up or not. So I don't want to hear it. If you had a concussion and they diagnosed you with a concussion, then fine. You're shut down and you're not playing. If you're coming back and playing, you don't get any of that. Just like no other athlete in any other sport do I give any of that. If you're cleared, you're cleared. And I don't want to hear it.
See, he took, he took a half-decent shot.
No, that was a real shot.
I've seen worse, but he took a half-decent shot. I also think that when he walked into the tunnel there, I thought all of a sudden his walk got a little bit slower.
Of course he was playing it up. Of course he was.
Like, oh, here we go.
Of course.
So right then and there is when I knew he was fine.
Of course. Here's Andy in Hanover. Andy, go ahead.
Hey, Felger, speaking of a-holes, what do you do when you go home? Play Fortnite? Are you berating some guy with this Tristan Thompson, Khloe Kardashian story? Like where have you been?
Under a rock, man. I've just been in a box score for 25 years.
A sports text.
Yeah, I've been in a sports text, exactly. Is that why you called? Oh, that's it. Maybe that is why I called. I missed half of it, actually. I don't even know exactly what he said.
I think he was making fun of you for not knowing about Tristan Thompson cheating on his wife.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't know who his wife was. I'm supposed to know this? If I'm supposed to know that, then I'm getting into a different business. Here's Fred in Canton. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, the E-Channel.
Hey, guys. First of all, I just wanted to say real quick, I think the best thing about Stevens is, and this is might be an early judgment, but it doesn't seem like his act is going to like really wear thin like it would with Belichick if he was to get sick of him. But that's my fingers crossed with him. But I think I saw Marcus Morris.
Something like that.
Oh, see, that's good. Yeah, it had to do something with that. With the wife, I mean, it's a famous, his wife is famous. She was just pregnant. This was a big story. It had to do something with that.
Oh, and he would do it, too. He would totally
he
say
feels
it,
a
right?
little off. Well, he and his brother are certifiably nuts,
yeah,
right?
I love the fact that his brother plays for another organization and is wearing a Celtics jersey at the games. Like that. Tell me that's not the greatest thing you've ever seen. If I were the Wizards, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, what are you doing? You're wearing a Celtics jersey? Like, what a dink move.
So he said Stevens feels like he's not going to wear on his players. I mean, I would agree. I mean, let's see. And, act like, the caller says, Belichick's act wearing thin. Bill's been here 19 years. I mean, let's not act like, this is Mike Keenan or something, or like, some sort of Lou Piniella. A guy comes in and tears a thing up for 3 years and then blazes out of here. Bill's been here 19 years.
But if the narrative continues from the media nationally that it's all Brad Stevens and not these players, I could understand that irking someone down the road. If I'm like maybe Marcus Smart or something like that, and I'm like, all right, can I get some credit here? It's not just boy genius here.
No question. So Stevens has to manage that somehow. He has to manage that somehow, because you're right. It's an ego-driven thing, and there will be issues there.
I mean, he's already starting to manage it. Right after those Parrish comments, Robert Parrish, and he says, the praise is uncomfortable. It really goes to the players. He's already having to manage it.
All right, speaking about Bill and his methods, he continues to be attacked. Continues to be attacked by a certain player across the league. Again, we just want to mix in a few other things other than Celtics, and we'll do this right after this. Is it Lane Johnson or Lance Johnson?
Lane Johnson.
Lane Johnson continues his attack, his barrage on Bill Belichick. We'll give you that next.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Yesterday or the day before, whenever, recently, he was on a podcast with Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Jimmy Stewart.
Yes, that is true, and that's the bottom line.
How's his podcast?
Fabulous. It's awesome.
Is it?
Open up a can.
I skipped this one because I wasn't interested in the stupid Eagles.
Okay, I think podcasts blow. You know how I feel about podcasts? Feels like it's just a bunch of guys with their feet up on the desk, no urgency, no clock, no timing, no pace. It's just all grab ass. and it usually sounds like it's done from your grandmother's closet.
Or Skype.
Or some effing, yes, some ridiculous downloadable stupid web thingy, which I can't stand, obviously, for obvious reasons. Because it sounds like this. Here's Lane Johnson on Steve Austin's podcast yesterday.
Here's what pissed me off is, you know, the Patriots, obviously, you know, I respect their coach. I respect Bill. I respect Tom Brady.
Okay, do you need to hear any more?
You know, he sounds like he's at the bottom of a swimming pool.
Yeah, no, exactly. He sounds like one of our callers is talking like this. Hey, guys, I want to talk about the Cavaliers today.
We'd like to bring in Lane Johnson to get his thoughts on Bill Belichick and the Patriots after the win in Super Bowl 52.
Here's what pisses me off is, you know, the Patriots, obviously, you know, I respect their coach. I respect Bill. I respect Tom Brady.
Who can listen to that?
The thing I just don't understand is that, you know, we won the game, and the talk continues to be about whether or not it's just a set of played Malcolm Butler. Where's the credit to the Eagles, you know?
Oh, I can't.
Sometimes the internet connection at 317 Gimmick Street isn't strong.
Go ahead.
I don't remember. Go ahead. It's all right.
I'm going to read the quotes. So here's Lane Johnson on with Steve Austin yesterday. Here's what pisses me off, he says. The Patriots, obviously, I respect their coach. I respect Bill. I respect Tom Brady. But just because the way that they won the Super Bowls, the Patriot way, is that how everyone else is supposed to do the same thing? No, it's not. And that's what I got mad at. The arrogance by them. There was obviously some stuff, he continued. There was obviously some stuff behind closed doors. Their owner talking crap to our owner. Bill Belichick talking crap to our head coach before the game. I'm not going to say it, but a lot of crap kind of built up to that. And I just got tired of hearing about it, man, to be honest. Okay. So the thing about the Patriot way and it being shoved down his throat, is that the only way? I understand why he would feel that way, especially after he since just won. I also think he doesn't get it because, and I this is a slightly exaggerated statement, but just follow me. Anyone can win one. Really, I mean, teams can back into it. Teams can just get hot for a little bit, and you can just have a run, and then you recede. Like, there's a lot of teams that have just had a run and won one or two, and that's it. They've done it for 18, 19 years. So I am sorry. If you want to do it for 18, 19 years, I think that might be the only way to do it for 18, 19 years. If you want to flash and win one or two, like the Seahawks or the Packers or you, Lane Johnson, or whatever, like everybody else, yeah, you can do it any way you want. You collect some talent, you have a good year, and then it all dissipates and you start over. So, like, yes, you don't need to do it the Patriot way to do that. That's been proven a million times over. To do it over an 18, 19-year period, tell me another way to do it, other than being incredibly disciplined and professional and keep your mouth shut and ignore the noise and all the stuff that they preach.
No, be consistent.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard to be consistent when you're flapping your gums all the time and allowing yourself to get distracted.
So I don't think Lane Johnson gets it. And maybe he will. Maybe he will when the Eagles suck in 2 or 3 years and it's all falling apart and he's going to sit there and wonder, say, well, how come we couldn't keep this together? Well, because you all ran your mouths and you all did exactly what you wanted and you let the players run the show instead of the coach. And now 3 years later, you're the Seattle Seahawks where you had to blow it up because no one could stand the sight of each other. So maybe Lane Johnson will, here's a guarantee, he'll realize it in 2 or 3 years why the Patriots do it the way they do it. But it's not the only way, but I think to do it over 18 years, it might be the only way. Anyway, this thing about the owner talking crap to our owner before the game, Bill Belichick talking crap to our head coach before the game, it kind of built up. I just got tired of hearing about it. To be honest, do you believe that Kraft and Belichick were talking S to Doug Peterson and Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, before the game?
No, I don't.
I mean, I would love to know what he means by that. Like, is it possible they were joking around and he interpreted it that way? I guess.
Is it possible Robert could have said something before the game, like, good luck, Jeffrey, you know, you'll get him next year? Like, possible.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, joking almost.
Is there any way Bill would ever? You think Bill jokes before games?
I don't think he jokes ever.
Do you think Bill does sarcasm?
Was Doug Peterson also at that Timberwolves game, though?
Was he?
No, I don't know. I'm just joking. Remember, that was kind of a lax, oddball week for Bill, considering he was at that game.
Is that talking crap?
No.
No, I told you.
What's he talking about?
So, again, I could see some sort of, like, playful comment, like you said. Yeah, good luck. He'll get the trophy next year. But other than that, like, something mean-spirited? No way.
Hell to to the no.
Particularly from Robert. Not. I just don't think...
No. Robert is possible. Like, I don't know how these
mean-spirited?
Owners... No. Not mean-spirited, but I don't know. I don't know how these owners talk to each other. You know, I don't know. Maybe there was. Because, I do know of a time when, and this was back in 08, when Miami came here with Stephen Ross, and he had just bought the team. And the Patriots took Steve around and were sorry. Someone told me the story that, you know, the Crafts were very, not intentionally so, but it came across as very demeaning where they're saying, Steven, you know, eventually if you stick at this long enough, you'll figure it out and you'll achieve what we've achieved. And, you know, it takes a long time. You got to make the right decisions. And, you know, you don't have much of a chance today, but, you know, who knows about a couple of years. And then the Dolphins went out and won 38-8. That was like the
Tony Sperano game.
Yeah, that was the Tony Sperano, the Wildcat game. So, like, I've heard that story. So, I don't know. Who knows how these owners talk to each other? Like, maybe kind of, sort of. Certainly not mean-spirited. No shot that Bill's saying anything. Are you kidding me?
Hey, Doug, you look like a fool with that visor. Nick Foles, you're not going to beat me with him. Like, you're not going to get anything like that out of here.
So Lane Johnson, in following up on the Patriots being a fear-based organization with players who are effing robots, to Steve Austin, he said, that's the thing you're never going to know. Whatever they're told to do in the media is what they're told to do. Like I said, they're robots. He said, I saw a Patriots defense that wasn't overly talented. It was all really about containing Tom Brady.
I agree with him on that one.
We had a hard time doing that. He had 505 yards, but that was really it, man. Going into the game, I'm not going to be shell-shocked by it. That was kind of our thing going in. I think we had the upper hand on that. So, I mean, he's basically just saying it was all about Brady.
He's right.
Hard to argue with him there.
No, he's right. I mean, again, the Patriots' defense was masked all year long because Belichick was able to, you know, put them in a spot where they had the lead and they played bad teams. So, you know, they looked better than they really were. But the assessment of the team is right. And the Patriots defensively were weak.
Okay, but again, the whole thing about that Patriot way being shoved down your throat, I mean, maybe not, and the Patriot way is not the only way to win. It might be the only way to win over a long period of time, and I think the Eagles are going to find it out. The Eagles are going to find it out like everyone else finds it out. And if Carson Wentz is good, really good, they'll be good for a long time, too. Like, that's obviously a big common denominator.
The quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, if you were to really look at all the organizations in sports history, with maybe the exception of the Cowboys, but even then under Landry, they were pretty buttoned down, wouldn't you say?
Oh, way.
Okay.
Totally.
So like the Niners were, the Canadians were, the Yankees were, always have.
Still are, absolutely.
Celtics were buttoned down.
Professionals.
Absolutely. Like all the organizations that sustained it for any length of time.
No question.
Required discipline, professionalism, like they
Duke,
kept their
Duke in basketball. If
they
you
kept
go
their
there.
Eye on the ball. They kept their eye on the ball, and they never let you know the term that Pat Riley uses. They never succumbed to the disease of me, right? Like I love that term, and I read it again today. Like maybe the Patriots are starting to feel it a little now, but it took 20 years.
Who was Pat Riley talking about when he said the disease of me?
Did you happen to read that story that Jimmy sent us?
I did not.
Because Windhorse wrote another thing about the Cavs and how they are now succumbing and crumbling to what Pat Riley called the disease of
me.
When
he said the disease of me, who is he referring to?
Oh, geez.
I think there is actually a tie-in. I think there's actually a tie-in. We'll get back to it right after Murray's update here. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Maz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
LeBron, you used that phrase zero concern the other day after the game one loss. When you have 42 and a triple-double and you still lose, what's your level of concern now?
We have an opportunity to go back home, protect home court. You know, we're going to use these days to really dive in on what needs to be done to help our ball club be successful. You know, they did. They did what they had to do, and that was protect home. And now it's our, you know, it's our time to try to do that as well. So, you know, we have a few days, like I said, and you know, we're gonna see what we made of on Saturday.
What's the Pat Riley line?
The disease of me.
So, LeBron doesn't deserve much criticism for last night, does he?
No. He gave, 42 points, triple double.
Like, this was not a shut it down kind of game.
No.
I think that he's a different player defensively. I'm whether that's effort or shutting it down or whatever. I think, and it's a, you know, that's part of it. What's different, you know, in the past, Maz, if LeBron came in here and had the first quarter like he had last night, he and his team win going away.
Sure.
Right? The Celtics don't respond. His team sort of catches the wind, you know, in their sails because of it, and we've seen it a million times.
They control the game wire to wire.
And that didn't happen this time. And a lot of that is you. Mostly it's you, because you were able to match. You were able to keep the game within reach while LeBron was going off. And so that's a credit to you. You stood there and took the punch. And by the time the dust settled, Cleveland looks at you and says, oh, we got to go all 48. They weren't ready to do it. Again, they weren't ready to do it. So that you put them in that spot. But the other thing is that LeBron's not the same defensively. So Jaylen Brown was a big part of it, right? Jaylen Brown was a big part of it early. I mean, just go look at the Celtics' first basket. It was a corner three by Jaylen.
Right.
Go watch LeBron on that play. See how he closes. He doesn't. So the Celtics exploited LeBron James defensively, is really a long way of saying this. And so it's just different. It was different with LeBron. Even though he put up those points and he got off the way he got off in the beginning of that game, the fact that he doesn't play on both ends of the floor anymore and his team wasn't able to respond to it, or you stood up to it, or whatever, it's just, even in the midst of it, didn't you feel it was different?
Well, there were a couple things. First of all, early in the game, I thought on a couple of occasions, and look, I didn't watch him every play defensively, but it looked to me, at times I noticed that he was running harder than he ran in the first game on defense. And then there was the play where Rozier got the breakaway, and he looked like he was going to close on him, and then he stopped. And Rozier ended up dunking. So there were a couple of times there where I saw more effort than we saw the first game. But that Rozier three from the corner, he just stood in the middle of the paint and didn't go out there.
Brutal.
And again, to me, it's showing up as much on the offensive end. I don't see him going to the basket. He just stood on the perimeter last night and took threes. So, you know, I have no idea whether there's something wrong with him or not. But he's not going to the hoop like he has before.
How did you describe it, Murray? How did you describe his 42 and triple-double?
The softest 42 I think I've ever seen. Like, he was, you know, all aboard, like, look out, you know, freight train LeBron in that first quarter. I was like, oh, boy, it is going to be one of those nights. And then, especially...
But hold on. Was it a freight train, Maz?
No.
Or was he just hitting threes?
No, he was hitting threes. I mean, so again, that's the
You don't think he was dominant in the first quarter, though,
no,
Maz?
No, he was. He was, Murray, because he made the threes. I mean, I think he had four of them in the quarter, right? So, but he wasn't going to the basket and just overpowering people like he often does or has in his career. And that's the LeBron that I really fear, because the three-point game's not his game.
No, you're right. You're right there. And so I also have to give credit to Marcus Morris in the way that he's defended him, too, so far in these first couple of games. But overall, the triple-double, the 42 points, the softest 42 I've ever seen. Really, he was meek in that second half. He was on both ends of the floor.
It's just, it was different. You know, when he did that to you in 2012, he started that game, you went, uh-oh. Early in that game, like, uh-oh, not our night. And certainly last year.
This series last year, yeah.
When they had some of those games and they got off to those early starts, you were like, uh-oh. I never felt uh-oh last night for the Celtics. Never. And maybe because it was never more than, you say 11? Was that their biggest lead? Cleveland's biggest
I think it was 11 points. I'll double check it, but I don't think it was bigger than 11.
I mean, that's nothing.
Well, even after that first quarter, he puts in 21 points in that first quarter, and the Celtics were still only down by 4 points.
They're still right there.
11 points, yeah.
That, to me, was maybe the most jarring thing of the night. He goes off like that, and they're still down by four.
And so I think he and the Cavs look at each other and go, oh, we're not just going to thump them and, you know, waltz over the last 30 minutes or so of the game. We actually have to do this the whole night?
Yeah, so it's one of two things. They look at the Celtics and say, okay, they're not going to break. Or LeBron looks at his teammates and go, oh my God, they are all so bad.
Or maybe LeBron came to the same realization that the rest of us came to somewhere along the line here in the spring. These guys are actually pretty good. They're better than I thought they were.
So, you know, what does that mean going forward? I still would not be surprised if the Cavs just shut it down. I mean, they shut it down last night, especially defensively. Would they do it at home with LeBron about to leave town? I don't think much of this Cavs team or their character or their heart, but that would, you know, that would be, even for them, that would be a bit much, don't you think? They've got to show up in these games in Cleveland.
If they can't win the next one, forget it. I mean, and I don't mean the series. I mean, I'm talking about their makeup. If they can't win game three at home in what will be likely LeBron's final stand here in Cleveland, and they play like they did in Boston, they should just quit. Don't even show up for game four.
All right. To me, I think the best thing LeBron did all night last night was his passing. He had some tremendous, tremendous
passes.
And
the pick and roll into the paint.
Oh, outstanding. That
great,
one.
Great bounce passes.
To Kevin Love underneath. He had a great outlet to Kevin Love for a long bomb. Like his, I thought, he also threw the ball away a crap ton. I don't know how many turnovers he had.
I think it was five or six more last night. I think he's got 13 in the series.
Six turnovers last night.
He had seven in game one.
So he also threw the ball away a lot, but he also had some great passing plays.
So those are two notes I wrote to myself during the course of the night, watching LeBron, particularly early in the game. He's still throwing the ball away too much, and he's settling for too many jumpers. So, again, just to go back, game one, he took 15 shots. Last night, he took 13 in the first quarter, including seven threes.
No, 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 Mass. The first game was about Brad Stevens' defensive schemes, don't you know? Why are you still fighting this?
Seven threes in the first quarter.
It was about Brad Stevens' defense in the first game. They built a wall. You see, LeBron just can't possibly get off because Stevens and his schemes.
See, and even the Morris thing, look, Morris is about as good as you're going to get on him. Okay, because Morris is a combination of a lot of things that he's strong enough to sort of fight LeBron there. He's tall enough to contest the shots. He's got enough quickness to sort of fight him on drives to the hoop. Like, there's a lot there. You can see why they like Morris on the matchup. You can. But I remember one drive in particular, LeBron put his head down, pushed Morris out of the way, and went into the hoop. And I don't remember.
He did it on two straight possessions. He scored once and got to the line the next.
I mean, he can do it anytime he wants, and I don't understand why he's not doing it more. That if I were a Cavs fan today, that would be my one big criticism of LeBron. Where's the attack the rim game?
Joe and Rozzy, where's your or what's your LeBron thought today?
You know why he doesn't do it, Maz? Because he's soft as baby poop. But I just want to say real quick, you're voting you best dressed today because Felger and Jim, those vests are atrocious.
Come on.
But anyways, LeBron, he gets elbow and he gets shoulder in the face by this guy that weighs probably $150 soaking wet, and he's flopping around like my wife at a swinger party. Get this guy an Oscar because he's the biggest actor in the game. And I just got another question for you boys. If we do get past Cleveland, which I think we will in six games, how many games do you think we're going to win in the finals?
Okay, Joe, we're purposely putting off the finals analysis till you get at least to a 3-0 lead against Cleveland.
Yeah, I think Stevens will outcoach Kerr.
Okay, again, game one of the finals is May 31st. 2 weeks from tomorrow? A week from tomorrow? What's the date?
2 weeks.
Two weeks from tomorrow. You know how much time that is to fill? We're not going to start that now. We're going to wait till the series, you know, and then we got to pace ourselves.
So I want to go back to the filthy Frisco.
You'll get the Warriors analysis coming up, okay? We're not going to do that now. The first thing is that the Tatum shot was actually a legit shot. When LeBron does his thing, you know, he's good at this too. He takes a knee and is like, puts his hand in his head and, like, you know.
It's almost like he does the Tebow.
Oh, it's so dramatic. Like,
it'd make a good WWE wrestler.
It totally.
Like, he really sells it.
It's such a put on. So when he first got down on that knee and started, like, you know, putting his hand to his head, I'm like, would you get up? And then they showed a replay. He got knocked. That was a legit knock. Now, I don't think he's severely concussed. I don't believe that.
No, it just got his bell rung. That's
but I think in this is the rare case where he actually took a real shot and was actually dazed a little bit, legitimately. The rare case where I can't believe I actually saw it and it actually happened, but it did.
He still dressed it up a little. When he walked into the tunnel and he saw the TV camera, all of a sudden he started walking a little slower. He almost started to wobble a little. Did you see that?
Yes.
Oh, I was like, good God, would you stop? You're fine. It's amazing Tatum's still alive after that collision.
Okay, you think we're being tough on LeBron and the Cavs, nothing compared to what they're saying nationally. We'll get to that right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
What you saw from the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight in the second half was an absolute embarrassment. You keep bringing up what Jeff Van Gundy said. You may have left out the line of the year. Jeff Van Gundy at some point in the third quarter said, there's so much eye rolling going on with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're like a married couple that are tired of one another. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. It was the most hilarious line of the month as far as I'm concerned. But the Cleveland Cavaliers were an absolute disgrace in the second half. They gave a lackluster effort. They played no defense whatsoever. And when you take into account the fact that your starting backcourt of George Hill and J.R. Smith were outscored 41-3 by Rozier and Jaylen Brown, that really tells you the story that you really, really need to know.
So again, some of the national commentary. Stephen A. Smith, we'll have more for you in a second, but you want to follow up on George Hill quickly?
Yeah, just quickly, because I'm glad Stephen A. brought him up. George Hill was like invisible in that game last night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he scored 3 points and shot 4 times in 33 minutes.
So again, in 33 minutes. Yeah. And you know what? This is what struck me. I looked up at one point, and I'm like, has this guy scored in this game? He had played at that point 30 minutes and taken 2 shots. Two. And I look at it and say, if you're not even going to shoot, like, how do you expect to score?
Some of those guys are petrified to shoot.
Look up what he makes a year.
I mean, so, and the reason I say at 30 minutes is because 2 of those 4 shots came in the final 3 minutes that he was on the floor when the game was decided. At that stage, he just chucked it up. But it felt to me like none of them wanted to shoot.
Nope, they don't. Except for Korver.
So, other than Korver, Love, and LeBron, the rest of the team is 3 of 21 from three-point land. And that includes the sniper, J.R. Smith, and the pacifist, Jeff Green. Like, the two of them.
The pacifist.
Oh, no, Jeff Green is...
Hill's a $20 million a year player, by the way. It's insane. It really is. It's crazy.
So just to give you his line, okay? 33 minutes, 18 seconds. 3 points. 4 shots. 1 assist. He's the point guard. Okay. 1 assist. No steals. He didn't even turn the ball over. Like, what did he do? He was like just a big zero on the floor. How does a point guard play 33 minutes and get no stats?
And refresh me. Did he get more of those minutes in that second half when Korver went out? Because that's one of the things that blows my mind about this. We want to get on Ty Lue. Is that Kyle Korver, who was kind of matching Jason Tatum shot for shot with ridiculous shots in that second quarter.
I said this earlier. They sent him to the bench too early.
It's insane.
He didn't play enough. He was the only other guy complimenting LeBron in that first half.
All right, so maybe he's a defensive liability, but that was one of the guys that was actually helping that team offensively last night.
And again, he was getting picked on the defensive side to the point where Lou's got to take him out, and which is why, again, you're the Celtics. Your big strength is that you have very few guys that can get picked on defensively. Not on the other side. You know, Philly had a huge problems in that regard, and Cleveland has some problems in that regard. But either way, Stephen A. has been all over the Cavs and all over LeBron. And I give Stephen A. credit for that because that's the marquee player in his league that has serious ties to ESPN and ABC. And the ESPN ABC crew has been very critical of Cleveland and LeBron. And I give them credit. I give them, meaning both the broadcasters and the league and the team, for allowing him to do so. Because Adam Silver and the league and the team could certainly make a call and call this guy and call that gutless executive at some TV network. And, you know, the TV executive is going to tell their broadcasters to tone it down. And the league could easily make that call. And apparently they're not. Because during these games, Van Gundy is just unloading. And Jackson is unloading. And I think it's so good and so strong. And it's such a service to their viewers and their listeners. It should be a lesson to everybody. But none of these teams seem to follow it, or none of these other leagues seem to follow it. Maybe Silver's the only one who gets it. But Van Gundy and Jackson just calling out the Cavs for quitting on defense repeatedly towards the end of this game, I thought was just exceptional. I'll give you a few examples here, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they get a mismatch here with Tatum guarding Korver. They feel the need to double. They swing it from Morris to Rozier, and no one. It's either James or Love is supposed to rotate. They choose neither guy. And Budweiser, do me a favor. Send a 12-pack to Ty Lue for having to watch that film tonight. He's going to need it. Because, Mike, if you have to beg your guys to give effort like on those plays when it's not going good, you're hoping against hope. Like, there should be no question about your effort, your mental stability. It should be whether we're just good enough on a certain night. From shooting it to maybe turnovers, missed free throws, but not in the playoffs.
That foul is on Smart, holding on the entry pass.
And Coach is right. They've got to be embarrassed. He's more passionate about their lack of energy and effort than they seem to be.
So good. Van Gundy cares more about it than the Cavaliers players do. And, you know, again, so that was that wide-open Rozier three?
Yeah, from the right elbow, basically.
And Lou has to call timeout to beg his players to play. Beg his players to give an effort. And they come back and immediately show the video. It's LeBron who doesn't cycle out, or Love, one of their two stars, two biggest names. And they show you the film. Like, again, you ever watch an NFL game where Peyton Manning screws up? They ever come back and show you a video of how Peyton Manning screwed this up?
Rarely.
Never. So, again, I give ABC and Van Gundy credit for it. They go right after James, right after Cleveland, right after their effort. And it's so true. It's so true. They realized eventually they were going to be in another dogfight, and they didn't want to engage. They didn't want to do it. What a gutless team that is. And good for Van Gundy for calling it out. Give me another clip, Jimmy.
Rozier wide open. Puts it in. A three-pointer for Terry Rozier. 14 points here in this third quarter.
Give the Celtics a lot of credit. They have turned it up. The Cavs defense has been absolutely awful.
You got to rotate. You can't just stand in the lane and hope someone misses. This isn't the back-to-back. This isn't a back-to-back in two different cities.
Van Gundy's incredulous.
He is, yeah. And you know what? It's a great point, too, because you sit there and you say, like, during the regular season, you got one game in Chicago, you're playing in Boston the next night, it's January.
Of course it happens.
Who cares? Right, who gives a rat's ass?
It's the East Finals, man.
The playoffs. For a trip to the finals, and you just had a night off, and before that, you had 6 days off.
And you can't get them to run to the three-point line? This caller before with the stat, I don't know if we looked it up, 42 uncontested shots.
Something like that, yeah.
42 uncontested shots. The one I saw is that LeBron James, he took 29, 28 were contested. So LeBron was amazing. He hit the shots, but he had to work for them. The Celtics? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And again, Van Gundy was great on it.
And I'll say this about, but I think Boston's clearly the better team, right? There's no shame in losing to a better team. But they owe themselves, if this is the end of this four-year run together, to do it the right way. Like, stay together, fight as hard as you can. If you can turn it and win 4 or 5, go to the finals, great. And even if you can't, feel good about how you went about losing in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Do it the right way, which is implying they're doing it the wrong way, which is implying they're quitting. God, how refreshing is that? To just call it as you see it and not have to, I guess, worry about the league or some TV executive calling you and telling you to cut it out. Oh, it's so good. So good. And does such a service to your listeners. Makes the product so much better, so much more interesting that Van Gundy's allowed to do that. Call him out for quitting. It was basically what they did. And then again, he might have had the line of the year. This one was great. I spat out my organic butter coffee and I was definitely not drinking it at 10 o'clock at night when he said this.
The Cavs eye roll each other more than a couple in a bad marriage.
It's just such a good line. The body language on that team. Ugh.
Brutal.
It's disgusting to watch. It's disgusting to watch.
I mean, again, it is. It's a front-running team. When they got you, then they're okay. Once you put up a fight, they wilt. Now, look, I'm eager to see what happens in Cleveland. I don't think the series is over, but it's getting there, man. And I'm not just going by the 2-0. I'm going by the body language of the Cavs. I thought Cleveland would be able to win a game here. And after last night, I now have serious doubts about that, which means the Celtics don't even have to win in Cleveland.
You know, I mean, again, the Cavs are that bully that gives you the best shot they have. Everyone else has gone down with that shot, except this guy's still standing there. And then what do you do?
See, I think that's LeBron's career. I mean, I really do.
For the most part,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
his
yeah. And that's a generalization.
Not 100%, but
right,
for the most part,
because he's had a couple of occasions in there where he did hit back. But overall, when you look at it and you look at his ability and everything, I always feel like LeBron was always good, for the most part, when he was out in front. And he had you on the run. Once you could flip the tables a little bit, LeBron would crack, and he's gotten better at it as his career's gone older. But or as his career's gone on.
But that team.
Oh, this team's one of the worst I've ever seen.
Oh, what a dog show.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.